You are listening to
Worldwide Engineering.
Worldwide Engineering.
Worldwide Engineering.
Worldwide Engineering.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the podcast. My name is Leon, and it is my pleasure to introduce you today to my guest, Daniel Scott Mitchell. Daniel is currently studying to become an engineer and currently works in the electric vehicle industry. More specifically, Daniel works at the electric car company Rivian and is working on the Rivian Prime Van project with Amazon, which aims to deliver the world's largest fleet of electric vehicles to Amazon, more specifically 100,000 electric vehicles. Other than that, Daniel got to work at some of the world's most innovative companies, such as Tesla and Formlabs, and a few others. During the podcast, Daniel and I got to talk about a few things, including the electric vehicle industry, what are some of the technological limitations the industry is facing, and what are some of the opportunities. Daniel also got to share with us his experience working at a few companies, including Tesla. And finally, we got to talk a bit about networking. How was Daniel able to land 7 jobs at some of the world's best and most innovative tech companies? With that said, I hope you enjoyed the podcast. It was definitely a good one. I'll be seeing you on the other side. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast. It's a pleasure to have you here. You know, it's one thing getting a guest, and it's a different thing getting a really good friend on the podcast who's also very knowledgeable about what you're talking about. So welcome, Jude.
Thanks for including me, Leon. I'm a big fan of Worldwide Engineering and also the podcast, so I'm excited to contribute here.
It's an honor, man. So for the people who do not know you, can you tell us a bit about who is Daniel?
My name is Daniel Scott Mitchell. I'm an engineering student at George Mason University. I've also had 7 tech internships in industries ranging from electric vehicles to 3D printing, robotics and nanotechnology. So I've had quite a range of experiences working at companies like Tesla, Rivian, Formlabs, and it's really been an exciting journey, and I'm excited to see what's going up next.
A lot of potential. So you currently work at Rivian. Can you tell us a bit about your job there? What are your day-to-day responsibilities?
Of course. I'm currently working in program management at Rivian as a program management intern. I'm working on the Rivian Prime Van project, which is a partnership between Rivian and Amazon to create the largest fleet of electric delivery vans in the world. And it's going to be 100,000 electric delivery vans. The first vans are going to be on the road in 2021. And so we're gearing up for production now, and the entire fleet will be on the road by 2030. So it's really exciting to be part of that, what's going to be happening in the next decade. Just for reference, the United Parcel Service, UPS, in the United States is the most valuable logistics company in the world. And they own 125,000 vehicles total. And that includes planes, trucks, vans, cars, motorcycles. And Amazon with Rivian will be rolling out 100,000 of just electric delivery vans. So it will be the largest fleet of delivery vans in the world by far. And it's interesting to see that that will be an application of electric vehicles as well. The role that I'm specifically involved in as a program manager is orchestrating all the different stakeholders to help produce this vehicle. So we work with stakeholders in the design studio, engineering, manufacturing, also Amazon, who's our customer, and then also our business and marketing side. So we're trying to keep all those groups in sync and go from what we have now, which is an idea and a prototype, through to a successful launch of a mass-produced product. So it's an exciting part of the journey, and I'm very grateful that I've been able to be a part of it.
I'd love to jump on the 100,000 trucks. That's a lot of trucks, first of all. Second of all, what makes Rivian trucks special enough for Amazon to choose them as their main delivery partners?
Amazon's working with a number of other companies as well. So they have partnerships with Fiat Chrysler as well as Mercedes to create electrified vans there as well. But I really think that as far as Rivian goes, they're one of the industry leaders in creating a reliable electric skateboard. And what that means is it's the wheel and the chassis and the battery. And that platform they used very versed with high versatility. The electric SUV that they're creating, as well as the electric pickup truck, all run on the same skateboard chassis. So I think Rivian's well proven in terms of using that chassis, and they've also got a talented group of engineers and leaders coming from your traditional automakers like Tesla, or coming from traditional automakers like Ford, GM, Toyota, and also some on the EV side like Tesla. And so they've got a unique collection of talent from different parts of the industry, and they've got a reliable EV skateboard. And one of the things that I think is very unique about Rivian's approach is that they're creating this van bespoke for Amazon. So Amazon is the customer, and they're creating it directly to their specifications. And as far as I know, this van won't be sold to anyone else. It's specifically for Amazon, which is a unique competitive advantage for Rivian in that the other automakers will be making these vans mass-produced for anyone to buy. And Rivian is creating this specifically with Amazon in mind. And there's actually a lot of really cool videos online. You can look them up, where Amazon has been bringing in their delivery associates, their drivers, to help us shape the product definition and help us decide which features we're going to include and what's going where. And it's really being designed with the delivery associate in mind. And so a lot of those videos are inspirational for me to see, because the work that we're doing is making it easier for those delivery associates to do their job. And they say, you know, if they could create a dream vehicle for doing their job, it's the one that we've developed. So it's exciting to see that.
That's amazing. So you said that you've also worked at six other on top of Rivian tech companies. Can you tell us a bit about those?
Yeah, of course. So I mentioned Tesla and Form Labs, as well as a robotics startup and doing research in a nanotechnology lab. When I was at Tesla, I was working as an intern mechanical design engineer. So I was designing and prototyping and building parts for the electric vehicles. And that was an interesting experience. I got to participate in design for, I think, every single one of their vehicles. So Model S, Model X, Model 3, Model Y, as well as the Semi, the Roadster. And I even did a little bit of work for their energy storage on the Megapack. I got to design parts for those products, which is really interesting because Tesla's an industry leader and they're a pioneer and they're doing a lot, and it's interesting and was an awesome experience to be a part of that. When I went to Form Labs, I also worked as a mechanical design engineer. They're an industry leader in high quality desktop 3D printing. So if you're looking for the most affordable but high performance 3D printer, Form Labs will be the one that you go to. And that was an interesting experience there, specifically because it's some of the smartest people that I knew, but they weren't condescending at all. And they're also really all makers. So they enjoy making things, they enjoy building things. And a lot of them have hobbies on the side where they go home after work and they're making and building things for their YouTube channel, or some of them are creating products for Kickstarter. And it was an interesting environment that people are able to balance and coexist their side hustles and their projects building things on their own with working for the same startup corporation together with a common goal. Before that, I was the head of mechanical design at a healthcare robotics startup, which was ranked top 5 in the world in 2019 by Stardust, which was pretty exciting. And I've also done research at a nanotechnology lab with Dr. Kong at George Mason University. And when I was doing that nanotechnology research, we were exploring the applications of graphene, which is 2D carbon, and it won the Nobel Prize in 2010, the discovery of graphene. And we were using graphene for mechanical and photonic applications. So I've had a lot of experience in different industries, and it's actually, I would say, an interesting lesson that I've learned doing this was that what I was doing and what my work was focused on was just as important as who I was doing it with. So one thing that I've learned in being a lot of these different companies is my job satisfaction is as much tied to the topic as it is to having a healthy match with a company culture. That's something that I like to share with people so that they find a place that fits for them You not just need to focus on, you know, what products a company puts out, whether that's interesting to you, but also the company culture and how you will fit in with there, whether it's mission driven or whether it's focused on personal development or whether everyone there is really working as hard as they can. You need to find how you will match with the company culture. That's almost more important than what you actually do in your role.
So then the question becomes, how do you identify a company's culture without working there? Because a lot of time, that's something you experience hands-on when you start collaborating with the team there, when you start talking and communicating with your manager, the upper manager, and how that trickles down from upper manager. So from, like, how do you get to identify that before even joining the company?
I would say there's three main ways you can do that. And the one is very specific to students, and it's that students have the ability to do internships. There's almost nothing else like it in the industry where you get to go try out a company for 3 months at a time with low risk, and everyone's happy to have you walk away at the end or stay on if you want to. So students really need to take advantage of the opportunity to do an internship, because like you said, there's nothing like actually working with the team to explore what the company culture is like. At the same time, the other two approaches I would take is, one is really, really asking about the culture and to be honest with the interviewer. So if you have an interview opportunity with a company, the person that's interviewing you is a part of that team and they do understand the culture dynamics. And what I like to say is that I want them to be honest and give me candor about what the company culture is, because that will help me decide whether or not I'm a good fit for the company. And so that's usually worked for me, to get some insight from the people who actually work at the company to tell me what their company culture is like and what their main values are and what it would look like for me to be a part of the team. The final method, I would say, to kind of discover a company culture before working there is to network. And that's something I have found LinkedIn to be very helpful for. I am connecting all the time, 24/7, with people who are doing interesting things at companies that I think are interesting. And I love to sit down and take 10 to 15 minutes to call people that I've met online. And it's, you know, it's not focused on, can you get me a job or can you get me a referral? Simply, it's focused on getting to know someone else, what drives them, what their experience is like. And as a part of that, you can also derive a little bit of interesting information about the company they work at. So one thing I've been doing over the last few months is trying to take at least one 15-minute call a day with someone I met online on LinkedIn. So some of them are other students who are looking for internships and want some advice from me. Other ones are engineers at the companies that I'm interested in working at. And oftentimes, I even connect with people at the companies I'm already with. So I'll take 15 minutes with someone that works at Rivian in a different aspect of the company than I do. And the whole point of it is just to get to know people, to build strong relationships and a strong network with other people. And Leon, I know you talk about this a lot, but your network is very, very important in terms of your future success, having a support network. And honestly, especially in terms of finding a job that will fit you and you'll have high satisfaction at, there's no way to know what the culture is like without having a strong connection with someone who's already there.
I'd like to talk a bit about networking. You know, it's really is one of those things that is so important for someone's success, but it blows my mind that this is something university does not even bring up. Not once in an engineering course has my professor worded the sentence, your network is so important for your success. They teach you what to learn, but they don't teach you how to get out there and actually, you know, create opportunities that are going to fit and open new doors for your career. So it's amazing that this is something you've been doing. And honestly, doing that once a day, just like you were saying, this is great. And it really is something that anyone with big ambitions should develop, in my opinion.
Yeah, well, I definitely concur with what you're saying, that there could be more university education on this. It blows my mind, like you were saying, to go to a university or an institution where you pay to be a well-rounded, prepared engineer or problem solver or what have you by the time you graduate. And there does seem to be a lack of information on how to connect with other people, which is so important. I'm lucky in that going to George Mason University, we actually have a course called Developing the Societal Engineer. And it's focused on how an engineer's role is in society and how to network with other people to join professional organizations, and also how ethics play a role in being an engineer. So I'm fortunate that we have that course, but I also understand that many people don't. And one thing that I would say is that, you know, these 15-minute calls for me, they are a minor investment in the grand scheme of things. I mean, I could be spending that 15 minutes playing video games instead or listening to music, but it's a short amount of time for me to build a real connection with a real person who's, you know, maybe somewhere else across the globe, but that relationship will pay off somewhere down the road. And at the worst case, I've made a new friend, which I can't complain about either. Well, one thing I would mention is that people don't always feel like they have value, right? So they're scared to reach out to a certain engineer at a prestigious company because they think that they would just be wasting their time. But there was an instance where I had set up a networking chat with one of my colleagues at Tesla, and he was a vice president of video production. And so he was high ranking in the company, and he, you know, I could have easily been deterred from reaching out to him because I was merely an intern. What could an intern provide to a vice president of video production? But he was willing to take 15 minutes with me. We grabbed a coffee, we had a chat, and forged that relationship, that friendship between the two of us. And later down the road, I was actually able to provide him a referral to a company that he wanted to go to. And, you know, that, again, strengthens our relationship, and it shows worth for me as an engineer to reach out to executives in a company that I can still provide value to them. But also, if you're an executive, it's worth taking times to meet with the interns as well. And one thing I like to think of is that aphorism that you should treat the janitor with the same amount of respect as the CEO, because everyone's an important connection somewhere down the road. And you never know what that's going to look like. So I want to give everyone my mind and my time. And, you know, like I said, in the grand scheme of things, 15 minutes a day doesn't seem like much, but it can seriously pay off down the road.
100% agree. I couldn't agree more. Like, this is an entirely different topic for an entirely different podcast, which I would love to have sometime soon. But about your 7 internships. So you've had experience on the wide spectrum, in different industries with different cultures and companies. So out of those 7 experiences, which one was your favorite and why?
I think my favorite would have to be Formlabs. It was such a talented group of individuals who were also the most stellar engineers I've met. Honestly, it's, you know, everyone that I worked with from every function of the business was one of the most intelligent people I've ever met. It's got a really high concentration of MIT grads. But the greatest part about that is that everyone's intelligent, everyone's smart, but no one was condescending or highbrow. Everyone was open to having a stimulating discussion, conversation, debate. And I would say that even the water cooler chats or the lunchtime discussions helped elevate my intellect. So it was really, really interesting to work in that group of people. And like I said previously, I was also really, really impressed by their culture there of, you know, being willing to include everyone and help them develop, but also that people were allowed to pursue their own pursuits on the side. There are a few people there who have launched multi-million dollar Kickstarter campaigns, and they've all done that while also balancing their full-time job. And not many companies would allow that to happen. They'd ask people to choose a priority. But Formlabs is really unique in that they're a maker culture. They enjoy and actually enable people to build things in their lab and then go spin it out as a product somewhere else. And I think that's a really unique offering that a company can give when many companies are also, at the same time, being very strict about IP or using company resources to do a project of your own.
Mm-hmm. And what about your experience at Tesla? How was that for you?
Tesla, I would say, is also another one of my favorites, but it was also the most challenging. And that being said, I've never worked harder, but that's because I've had such a talented group of people around me who are also mission driven and focused, and I've never seen such a talented and dedicated group of engineers than when I was working at Tesla. They gave me real challenges from the start, and that was really, really fascinating and also satisfying to me to know that even as an intern, I was providing real value to the company. So like I said, I designed parts that are on the cars that we sell today. I've also written the first quality inspection specification for the Model Y underbody, which is the largest structural casting in the world. And it's on the cars that are sold today. And I helped write that engineering specification. At Tesla, people gladly worked weekends and late nights because they were so mission driven. And I was only there for a few months, but that's the most I've ever seen a company achieve during a 4-month timeline was when I was at Tesla. And I'm sure they're continuing at that pace today. And it's no surprise to me that they lead the industry by so much because of the way that their engineers are so focused on their mission and willing to work and give 110%. And that was really inspiring to me.
Is that a company you see yourself go back in the future?
I'm not sure that Tesla was the best culture fit for me. So like I mentioned, I'm really, really focused on finding a position where I can balance both my interest in the technology that they're making and my fit with the culture. And like I mentioned, I was so impressed by their culture there that everyone was so motivated and so mission driven. But when I found that I was there, I was not a great fit for that culture. And one thing that I would mention is that it's nothing against Tesla and it's nothing against me. Many times when people think they get rejected for a job or even when they go to a job and they don't like it, that it's a knock against their talent or their abilities. And honestly, it's really about finding a great fit. The way I like to view it is it's like trying to make a friend. Sometimes you and another person just don't get along. It's nothing wrong with the other person. It's just a matter of your personality and their personality and how you mesh. So while I'm cheering for Tesla and I'm excited for them to do great things in the future, you know, I hope one day to be driving a Tesla that I've helped design, but I'm not sure that at this point in my life, I see myself there, and I'm open to that changing as well. I'm trying to keep great connections with everyone at Tesla, and I'm looking forward to seeing how they do and maybe being back there one day. I'm not sure. I'm keeping my options open.
I absolutely love your mindset and your enthusiasm. Thank you for bringing that on. So you are currently working in a very quickly developing industry, which is the electric vehicle industry. And this is something that in the last few years has gone from, electric cars are being tested on like a Google campus or some lab in MIT to actually being on the road and seeing Teslas everywhere. So what do you think are some of the technical challenges that are still facing electric vehicles for them to become as widely developed as regular cars? Because I've seen this stat somewhere that even though there are a lot of electric cars being rolled out on the market, this only represents a very small market share of the actual cars being sold. So what do you think about that?
So you asked for which challenges or technological limitations that EVs exactly might have to overcome. But one thing I would say is I think the technology's ready. It's there. And people just really what will shift before electric vehicles become mainstream is the level of adoption. And I think that people are slowly coming to the realization that electric vehicle technology is there. A lot of people are concerned about range anxiety, but there are a lot of electric vehicles now that can go 400, 500 mile between charges, which is longer than anyone really drives in a day. And I think people are slowly coming to that realization that EVs are not only the sustainable choice, the green choice, they're also the economic choice because, you know, even though the sticker price on an electric vehicle when you purchase it up front may be higher than a comparable gas vehicle, the maintenance costs over the lifetime of an electric vehicle are much lower. And there are some Tesla vehicles now that, you know, they think they might last for 1,000,000 miles. And there's no gas vehicles that can do that today. And finally, the last level of adoption that I think people will have to go through before they realize that EVs are really the next choice is that they're also becoming the performance superior option as well. So for everyone from the sports car driver to the pickup truck driver, you're really seeing EVs become the top performer in all those different subsets of automobiles. And one thing I like to notice is that if you look at like the fastest production cars that are widely available to people, those are electric vehicles, and also the fastest or the production trucks with the highest torque coming off the line, you know, no modifications, those are also electric vehicles. So I think people are starting to realize that in terms of sustainability, economics, and also performance, EVs are really not just a competitor with gas vehicles. In many cases, they're actually superior. So I think that in the next few years, electric vehicles will really be taking up a large part of the automobile market share.
So what about, what about the charging network for electric vehicles? You know, let's say you're going on a road trip and you're driving a gas car. You know that if you run out of gas in the next 100 miles, that there's going to be a gas station somewhere around the neighborhood. But does that apply to electric vehicles right now in the U.S.?
In the U.S., definitely along the coasts and in the most urban areas, yes. When I lived in San Francisco working at Tesla, it was amazing to me to see charging stations almost as frequently as gas stations. And I think that's the future. So in many places, while the charging network isn't up to par with the amount of gas stations, we're actually starting to see in the U.S., old gas stations being converted to charging stations. So, you know, you would drive up and look at it and think, oh, wow, that's a gasoline station. If you look closer, it's actually a bunch of electric vehicle chargers. And one of the unique things about electric vehicles is that since the charging time might take, you know, 15 to 20 minutes instead of how long it takes to fill up your gas tank in less than 5 minutes, we're actually seeing people, the charging stations aren't necessarily right on the highway. They're being moved to economic centers like shopping centers and supermarkets so that people can take a break and grab a meal while they charge. And as charging technology increases and also as the density of chargers increases, I think you'll say like you're seeing where you go on a road trip and you can be confident that you're charging anywhere. But one of the great things about most of these electric vehicles is that in their GIS mapping system in the car, they have logged where the chargers are. So if you hop in a Tesla and plot a road trip from San Francisco to Lake Tahoe, it will tell you where the chargers are along the way, and it'll direct your route to go to the chargers. So as far as going on road trips, I'm not really concerned to using an electric vehicle.
That's what fascinates me, how Tesla was able to turn a car into a smart car. You know, we all know smartphones, but it's really amazing to see what they've been able to achieve, the level of intelligence they've been able to add to the car. And this is only the beginning. This is only a representation of the way the industry is heading in the future, you know? And it's going to be super exciting to see that in a few years.
Yeah, well, that's one of the things Elon likes to tout, is that when you buy a Tesla, it will only get better from the day you purchased it as they give over-the-air updates and improve the software. If you buy a Tesla today, it will be better in 5 years than it is today. And with other cars, maybe that's not the case. So like you said, it's really interesting how electric vehicles have revolutionized the industry, turning a car into a smart car.
That's amazing. So you're currently almost done, I guess, your internship at Rivian, right?
So my summer internship wrapped up at the end of August, and I'm continuing there in a part-time capacity to continue to support program management. But that part-time internship will end in December, and I graduate from school in May.
What's the next step for you?
I'm not quite sure. I don't know if you can tell a theme with me, but I like to keep my mind open. I like to keep doors open and be willing to explore and also be willing to pivot and chase an idea or chase a certain industry that is important to me. I'm certainly passionate about the EV landscape. I'm sure that the next car I purchase will be an electric car. I've enjoyed designing and building electric vehicles, and I'm confident that, you know, some variant of electric vehicles, whether it be battery electric vehicles, hydrogen fuel cell, or something different, will be the future of transportation. So it's definitely an interesting industry for me, but I'm not quite sure where I'll end up in the next few years.
So Daniel, you told me you have a new podcast you're working on. Can you please tell us about that, please?
Yeah, well, so I'm working on a podcast right now. It's going to be a microcast format, so less than 15 minutes. And it's going to give you a high-powered, multi-times a week briefing on what's going on in the technology and engineering landscape. And I'm going to take kind of digest the largest trends and what I think is going to be important to everyone to know. And so that podcast will be coming out in a few weeks. I'm really excited. Everything's coming together. And if people want more information on that podcast, I actually have a mailing list you can sign up for on my website. And I'll email you first when it drops. So you can, you know, join on and subscribe to that microcast to get high powered briefing on engineering news. And I'm going to send you that link, Leon, but it's also, you can access it at danielmitchell.info/podcast.
Perfect. And I guess the best place people can get in touch with you if they have a question is on LinkedIn, correct?
Correct. So Daniel Scott Mitchell on LinkedIn. I'm black and white photo of me smiling with a blue ring around it. That's how you find me.
Classic. You won't miss it. All right, Daniel, thank you so much for coming on the show. It was great having you.
Of course, Leon. Thank you very much.